Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hello everybody, welcome to the Goldbridge Saves Football podcast. It's our Premier League review show and there's so much to discuss, Will.
Yeah, so much. I mean, Arsenal, Liverpool, Man City winning. Are they lucky? Are they cruising? I'm just ready to get into it.
We've also got a brand new section, Star of the Week. Can you guess who that is? We've got Pratt of the Week. VAR's getting it. And we'll be getting into your comments as per usual. Big Premier League weekend, lots of controversy, lots of positives. Let's do it. But look, I want to get straight into it because there's so much to discuss, Will. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's maybe start with the VAR stuff because you're always foaming at the mouth just to come in. And maybe what I feel like you've been doing at the start of this season is making a mountain out of a molehill with some of these VAR decisions, because we are trying to say, let me finish, trying to say football, and we are trying to be on the right side of the fans. But some of the tweets that you're coming out with this weekend, I'm getting texts, messages. Do I need to go round? Do I need to text family members to make sure you're all right? I know you had a bit of a lads' weekend this weekend, but some of them, they're just not on.
Well, I'm going to shock you all this weekend because, one, I've got something positive to say about the PGMOL.
Wow.
And two, I agree with Gary Neville on something.
What?
So maybe I've had a bad weekend. But look, let's hit this straight away. VAR, 2 weeks in. I think there was a lot of problems last week we spoke about. I'm not going to draw up a big list this week, but the Bournemouth game yesterday is an absolute shambles. And if you didn't see it, Bournemouth declined a winner by VAR for what was a factual handball. A new term in the world of VAR. Fact, we've had you know, what's some VAR terms that we don't like? Not clear and obvious.
Well, like deliberate handball is the one that's been going on for ages.
We've now got factual handball. At the end of the day, the cross comes in. The Bournemouth player goes to win the ball. It hits his upper arm shoulder and goes into the back of the net. I tell you what, the Bournemouth manager said it's the most frustrating moment of his life. And he's been on a date and paid £100, and the woman went to the toilet and just went out the window.
Wow.
That's frustrating. Yeah. And he says, that's more frustrating.
Yes.
And Eddie Howe agreed.
Yeah, but Eddie Howe pandering there to the Bournemouth fans who he absolutely loves, you know what I mean? I can see why. I can see both sides of it, but like,
it's not a factual handball.
I think they've got to stop the terminology there, haven't they? Factual handball just makes you think, what was everything else going on before then? Were these not factual handballs or the ones before? So I think terminology there, but...
Why not let the referee go and have a look at it?
Yeah.
I think that's the problem, because we've been told that referees are going to be allowed to referee on the pitch more, and we've seen that in the first week, rightly or wrongly. And then this one, VAR goes... it's a handball, carry on with the game, the goal's not allowed. And the referee sort of goes, well, all right, I'll trust you.
But that's tying into the new mandate of trying to speed everything up, doesn't it? Which I think in certain elements of the game, it's really working with like challenges and different things. And the speed of the game, I think, has been a lot better this year, just in terms of those. And then obviously the one after that's the Joe Linton one, which, you know, I'm a big wrestling fan.
Mm.
JBL, clothesline from hell. We've seen him swung, and that was one of the best ones I have seen.
I just think ultimately we won't draw.
I just think we are going to have so many this season. I think as a hill to die on, I think we're going to have more.
Of course we are, because it's not fit for purpose. That's the whole point.
No,
we spent our whole last season talking about this, and I think people are tired of it, and that's what Howard Webb wants. He wants people to get tired of it so they don't talk about it. Well, listen up, Howard.
No, he wants the show.
No, well, listen up. We've got Michael Owen on Pratt of the Week, by the way, talking about that show. What a Pratt. But we'll talk about Pratt in a minute. But look, I think Bournemouth have been robbed there. I think Newcastle know it. The Joel Linton one could have been a red card. I agree, but it's the goal disallowed that frustrates the hell out of me, because I think that could be a big 3 points in the top four race for Newcastle, and it could be a big 3 points in what Bournemouth are trying to do, and they have been robbed of a goal. And just in anybody, if anyone's under any illusion, it's not a factual handball when it hits your shoulder. Like, when you watch the replays, there's a lot of debate there. It was a bad decision and a bad piece of officiating.
Well, speaking of ones that were not contentious, but that you've tried to make contentious, I'll just take you back to August the 24th, just after lunchtime.
Saturday,
as it's more commonly known in the English dictionary. No excuse, Brighton got the win today, and we'll deal with it. But that Garnacho goal being ruled out is a farce. Technically, it's offside, but come on! They need to change the rule there. No deliberate action, and it's going in. So you want the rules to be the rules, but only not when they apply to you. That's what's going
on.
People
say I only speak one language. Yeah. Well, I also speak English and facts, because when you say that back, I'm nodding all the way through it.
So you
it's like Gareth from The Office. Good looks, sense of humour. Yeah. I completely agree with that.
So you want the rules to apply for everybody else, but not for you when they need changing.
There is a rule there that needs tweaking.
But what would be the rule? Because then you're just going into subjectivity city.
Well, the rule would be if the ball is going in and it hits a player on the line and there's no way of it not going in the ball goal, it should be a goal. No. I mean, if you're Brighton, you think it's bloody Christmas. Look, that is a goal. It's technically not a goal. I agree. But what I'm saying is, that's not why we watch football. We don't watch football so that Garnacho scores a goal, but it hits Xerxes on the line, so it's offside. Like, there is no intention there, and it's basically going to be a goal. It's a freak. It's a freakity of the rule.
But also, it's a very specific incident, so I think if you write a rule up for it, then you're just going to get yourself in all heaps of trouble, because then there'd be like people whenever they're like, that is the most specific incident of that. And I sort of
you're telling me if that goal get given and the rule had been tweaked before and Brighton went, that's not fair, we could have stopped that goal. No, you bloody can't. There's no Brighton player anywhere near it. Xerxes inactive, really. It's just hit him. Look, it's offside, I accept.
Thank you.
But what I'm saying is, if England are 1-0 down to Germany in a World Cup final and Harry Kane slips and it hits him, you're going to be going, what a stupid rule.
But
that's
if it's
what I'm
at the other end and Brighton and Joao Pedro's
I'd
doing
say,
that.
Look, happy days, lucky. Yeah, I feel really lucky.
No, I don't feel like
I've done anything in a football.
And also, Eric Ten Hag came out in the post-match and was like, Xerxes got a look at himself there.
Well, Eric Ten Hag came out with a lot of bollocks before, after, and during that game of football.
Well, how the tide does turn. Should we start with Manchester United? I know you've spent a lot of time on it, but it's just quite nice for me to maybe just prod you a little bit more when it comes to United-Brighton.
Well, there's three games I sort of want to talk about. Obviously, we'll talk about everybody else as well, but certainly United, Arsenal, Chelsea. Lucky Arsenal, a lot of people are saying. I disagree. Chelsea, silencing the critics, including me. But we'll start off with Manchester United. Eric Ten Hag, under pressure. I tell you what, I don't normally agree with Gary Neville, but just so everyone knows that we're fair, he said after the game that Ten Hag has heaped a load of pressure on himself. I mean, I said it straight after the game, so let's not argue about who said it first.
He wasn't doing the game.
No, he said it actually a day later, so he's probably watched my match reaction.
Yeah, I think he's definitely doing that on the Saturday.
I think he is, just nicking ideas. Well, remember last year when he was on the Monday Night Show and he had the phone? And we think we know who messaged him, and he was like, yeah, I think that this. And we know who was messaging him about that. But anyway, look, he's right. Ten Hag has heaped pressure on himself. And I think the other thing I agreed with Ten Hag about was that Manchester United have spent £100 million on strikers in the last 12 months with Rasmus and Xerxes.
Yeah.
If Ten Hag's plan is now to play with a false nine, then you've got to look at that and go, what the hell's going on? And what Gary Neville said was, you've got to have a focal point. That United team needs a striker. We saw it against Fulham, and he changed it at half-time by bringing Xerxes on, but you've already lost half the game then. And I absolutely agree with that. And there are some United fans out there that say, well, no, you've got to give him time. He's got a new system. If his new system is to play a false nine, he should have been sacked in the summer, because you can't spend £100 million on strikers in 12 months and then not play a striker. So that needs to stop. But I don't know what your thoughts will and everybody else, but he's third in the sack race now, Ten Hag. The only two ahead of him, and one of them's an anonymous, one of them's a word I can't say. One of them's a load of bollocks. Maresca is only there because he's Chelsea manager. I don't think he's in danger. Sean Dyche has got shorter odds, which we'll talk about in a minute. But yeah, he just heaped pressure on himself. That was my thoughts. He made loads of bad decisions that sort of upset the fans, and then it went wrong that he didn't need to make.
Well, I think the strikers one's the first point, because also it's you've got evidence from that Fulham game of Xerxes being the focal point. One, scoring a goal, which is obvious, but he also changed the game when he came on. So that's the one. The De Ligt one, just even like Garnacho as well. Like Garnacho crossed the ball to Xerxes for the Fulham winner. They looked so much more direct when that was happening. Poor old Mason Mount up there. Like, was it injury related?
Well, apparently I took the piss out of Ferdinand because he said he's playing so well, it must be injury. And I was like, come on.
He's just like a dog without a bone up there, isn't he? He's just like running around being made to do a position that he's not used to in a team that's like not built to do that. And then you look at the back, and I know we'll come onto it with different opinions, but like the way you've brought in De Ligt, like, and I probably said, like, well, it's maybe worked out better because now you definitely know Maguire's not the man to go forward. So when De Ligt does come in, it's like real clear evidence. Like we were talking on Friday, like, what if Maguire has a really good game, then asserts himself in the team going forward?
But that's the problem, isn't it? Like, you know, if you're Birmingham or Chelsea or whatever like that, and your manager buys De Ligt because you know your centre-back's not good enough, and then you're playing a game and he's picking Maguire, it's a weird, oh, I've got a massive problem. I've shit my pants. I've been to the shop and bought a new pair, and then he turns up at the pub's thinking of shit. Why aren't you wearing your new pants? Well, I thought I could get another day out of him. It's that, and he does it all the time. He did it with Casemiro 2 years ago. It's like, you clearly need a new centre-back, but now you're using the old one, and then he makes a mistake, and we're meant to feel so. That's what I mean. That is, I mean, a lot of people in the chat are talking about Rashford, Garnacho, you mentioned the striker situation. Took Bruno off with 10 minutes to go for McTominay, who's got sold the next day. Just an absolute hat full of bad decisions. And we only lost 2-1 in stoppage time. So you just think if he'd made one or two decisions differently, probably would have won.
And I think all it comes back to, especially with Ten Hag, is like a large majority of the time, the subs are just always seems to be wrong. Or like he makes a sub and you're like, it's almost a bit like the Gareth Southgate syndrome where you think, well, until this Euros with Watkins coming on. But like, it's a bit, I just feel like he always gets the, to be fair, bringing Xerxes on at half time's good, but then the backdrop, like you said, is like he should have started anyway.
Well, the backdrop is that he might have done it because Mount was injured, which case he wouldn't have done it. What I will say as a United fan is I want Ten Hag to do well, and I will back him, as everybody knows who watches the United stand. And it's certainly not time to sack him. But what I will concede is still 2 days later, furious with the volume of bad decisions. And I've got a right to say that, even though I want the manager to do well. Yeah. You can say you did it in the summer with Southgate. You know, you've always stuck by him, but you've got to a point where you're like, well, I'm not saying sack him, but bloody hell, he's making a lot of mistakes. And I feel like Ten Hag is almost Southgate in the World Cup, in the Euros. He's making decisions. And you're going, why? And I think that was the frustration. I mean, Marcus Rashford's a problem unto himself. Like, he's just so, people are waiting for this switch. It's been a long time we've been waiting for the switch. Like,
what,
I don't know whether
to turn it on.
Yeah.
And I think like we wanted to have a little chat about like players that need to move on before the end of the window. We've got some big shouts in there, but I think Marcus Rashford's one of them, because how many times have we sat down? You'd have done it so many much more on the United stand, but like, Alan Shearer, to be fair, the analysis on the on Match
good.
Of the Day
Offside,
was good.
Yeah.
Just like, just constantly and just saying like...
I mean, again, I've been mentioning this for a long time, so I don't know whether Shearer's been watching the United stand.
Yeah, big fan.
Yeah.
He loves, and he loves your own personal channel as well, actually.
Yeah.
But more content on that.
He likes driving with Goldbridge.
Yeah, he loves that.
Yeah. Does it while he's ironing.
Yeah. He was saying like he's what, 26, 27?
Yeah.
And I still have that just because he's been so young, and it's, you know, like, it's like an elderly relative, aren't they? When you see an elderly relative, they're old for your whole life. They're 60 to 90, they're old. Like, Rashford's always like a kid in our eyes.
Yeah.
But he is in his late 20s now, and he has got the mature to be like, that goal should have stood by an inch or a yard. And the Xerxes one's different just because it is a bit of an anomaly. But
yeah, he's bad luck. I felt frustrated at the time. It's bad
but
luck.
But again, it's like we were speaking about Chelsea with like the Man United problem was a striker and not being able to score goals going into this game. And then the defence being a little bit shaky from the back. And they bought De Ligt and they've got Xerxes and they're both on the bench. So it's just like...
Yeah, and this is Ten Hag. He's frustrating.
But like we are common men. We are just but men, Mark. And like
when we'll hit say football though.
Yeah, and when
collectively with the chat.
When it's universally like we can all agree on it, I just think like what are you doing?
What I've learned about United that I never learned in the first, you know, I mean, when Sir Alex Ferguson took over Manchester United, I was 6. So basically I had Sir Alex Ferguson from 6 until you know, however old I was when he retired. What,
he was
10,
an old man.
10 years? I was in my 30s when he retired. So yeah. Basically, that's all I had. This elite. Oh, can I just say, talking about elite, Matthew Lund's gifted 5 memberships in the live chat. What a legend he is. Get your comments in. Yeah, I had this elite manager who you just had total faith in, and he did make mistakes, but you'd go, it's Sir Alex. And then what the last 10 years has taught me, and I'm sure there's a lot, you know, a lot of football fans will agree, is that although these people are managers and players, they are mere mortals. And actually, a lot of the time, you get a lot more sense at Stamford Bridge or the Emirates or Anfield than you do in the boardroom.
Yeah,
certainly.
Yeah, sure.
And I think that's the disappointing thing, is that you don't feel any guilt calling out these inadequacies, because you know full well that we've had 10 years of these mistakes at United. And I can see with Ten Hag, the reason you've got the moral crusaders over the weekend going, it's only the second game, you can see what he's trying to do. And I'm like, yeah, but this happened to Ollie, happened to Jose. They got into this stubborn rut at the start of the season and they were gone by Christmas. So If Ten Hag either takes the warning, I don't think he's going to get the sack, but he can't make that many mistakes every game.
And like you said, with the false nine thing, it's like, right, that feels like to everyone, like his plan A.
If he goes with a false nine, he'll lose his job.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll say that right now. You can't spend £100 million on Xerxes and Rasmus and then go, I'm playing a false nine now.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't. No, I won't have it. You can't have that. I'm sorry. You're not doing it. Don't do it again, Eric.
Boys,
you're
delete.
Not picking a false nine.
Delete. Right, we're going to do one at the back now.
Yeah.
8 midfielders.
Yeah, in year three, you can't. It's like the Batman trilogy, isn't it? The first two films are good, and then in the third one, Batman turns up dressed up as a bloody cow.
Yeah,
I'm Moo Man now. You're not. You're Batman. Get your bloody Batman stuff on. You're not a cow. You're Pratt.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm irritated by this false nine stuff.
No, it's just real staggering, like, when it just seems so obvious to us.
He made so many mistakes on Saturday. It was so many mistakes.
And again, I think it's highlighted even more just going up against the manager he's going up against, who is, like, as everyone says, there's 3 players older than him in the team. And tactically, he got it so much more spot on with his substitution, with his changes. And like...
But what I think, I mean, my interpretation of the Brighton manager is he just did probably what most of us would do.
Yeah,
he was
yeah.
like, this is how the game's going.
Yeah.
Right, let's tweak it here and there. Let's stick to the plan. Let's stay organised. Let's stay in the game. Oh, we've won it at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
And whereas Ten Hag's going, I'm putting Maguire at the back. I'm putting Garnacho on the bench. I'm playing 2 false nines. I'm taking Bruno off for the last 10 minutes. And you're like, you're creating chaos, while this guy in the other tunnel was just going, stick to the plan, tweak it, trust yourselves.
And when he did his subs as well, weren't there? There was just like a big batch of them around like the 90-minute mark, wasn't there? So just to be like, right, pigs and shit, let's go for it.
Yeah.
And it worked out. And like, I know you've talked about the defending, which is like, but I just, if you've got an organised team and an organised, and more, it's not experience because Maguire's got that, but like to have the 2-3 players lining up at the back post, it's just
embarrassing.
Sunday league.
And that was on Casemiro. But look, Willie, Ten Hag, 3rd in the sack race. That's going to happen when you're Man United manager. We're going to talk about Dyche in a little bit and we'll talk about Maresca. But one game I did want to talk about was the Villa-Arsenal game.
Yeah, yeah.
I watched this on Saturday as well. A lot of people saying Arsenal were lucky. Do you think they were lucky in the chat? Let us know. But I felt the game was actually very similar. Brighton, Man United and Villa Arsenal. I felt there was a lot of similarity there in the sense that Ten Hag went weird, whereas Arteta just stayed calm. You know, Ollie Watkins, brilliant save from Raya, missed a chance as well. Villa probably had the XG. On a different day, Villa win that game. But you could say that about United, you know, the Garnacho thing. United could have got a draw, they could have won it, but Brighton won. Arsenal, I would not define that as lucky, because I think what they did is, we know they've got the best defence in the league. Yes, Ollie Watkins should score, but they stay calm. He takes Martinelli off for Trossard, who I think Trossard should be starting more games. The chance comes, they score. Martinez makes a mistake on the second one. 2-0 win. Arsenal get that job done. Wasn't their best day, but we weren't surprised by it. And I think, you know, that is why Arsenal are where they are and Ten Hag United are where they are, because Arteta just stayed calm, rode the storm that you know is going to happen away from home in the Premier League, kept the clean sheet and didn't start doing silly things. Just kept, like, we keep going, and they come away with a 2-0 win. And Villa, every right to be, you know, disappointed, and we'll talk about the star of the game in a moment. But what a job by Arsenal. I don't think you can call that lucky.
But I think the lucky element comes into it because Ollie Watkins, like, though we can say like two big chances, they were two massive, massive chances. Like the first one, I think they were saying about his footwork maybe not being there, but he can still take a touch because he's just got so much room because it's come on the turnover.
Look a bit rusty, isn't
he? But he should score that. And then the one, I mean, we talk about Raya save, but there's no way he should even have a chance to save that.
Well, it's a great save from Raya, but the ball's still very central. That's what I mean. If you put it anywhere
in the
other half.
That's where I think they've got lucky, because you've got one of the Premier League's best strikers who's trying to have a season where he's kicking on from last, and he's just, effectively, he just cost Aston Villa the game there.
Well, having said that, if Watkins scores then, Villa probably go a bit defensive. Arsenal would probably go and get a draw.
And then also, because of that fact as well, I think the substitutions that they brought on sort of changed that pressing, didn't they? Because they were sort of like, they were mentioning the analysis, closing up the gaps there. And then as soon as the changes came on, there was just a little bit of a gap where they give Porter the pass in. And then all of a sudden, everyone's on the counter, everyone's on the break. So I think the Watkins misses was as a domino effect all the way down to the winners from Arsenal. And yeah, Martinez at the end should be saving that shot from Thomas Partey.
HMD says, Villa's a tough team. Unai Emery team is a difficult game to play. Look, I messaged one of my Villa mates after the game and I went, you know, actually, this is the way to say it. I don't think Arsenal were lucky. I think Villa were unlucky in the sense, if you're a fan of Villa, I watched them play against West Ham. They deserved to win that and they were very unlucky to give a penalty away, but they still managed to win. Against Arsenal, you win that game probably 6-7 at times out of 10, which is why, as an Arsenal fan, you know that game's difficult. They beat you twice last season. We spoke about it on Friday. You come away with a 2-0 win. You say, we don't need to worry about Villa for another 5 months.
Yeah.
You leave Villa with that. Villa will be fine. Villa just need to bounce back again. I thought that, look, for me, I can hold it in no longer. It's one of the big controversies for me. We're here to save football, the Goldbridge Saves Football podcast. And I felt on Saturday there was a new segment to this show. We always have Pratt of the Week. Well, I want to have Star of the Week. And I can't nominate myself, so I'm going to go with Morgan Rogers at Aston Villa. Now, I know you're a big hater of Villa because you're a Blues fan, but for me, Morgan Rogers reignited my passion in football. I love football, but I was just like watching Gascoigne in the late 80s. I ain't seen a player do this in ages. It excites me. The players that excite me are the players who get me off the edge of my seat. And Morgan Rogers at the weekend, unexpectedly, I'd heard things about him, but I'd never really watched him. And I watched him against Arsenal, one of the best teams in the world, let's be honest. Terrifying Rice and Partey, because every time he got the ball, he didn't take people on every time. He'd lay it off and run, but he wants to run at people. And we've become so indoctrinated into this Pep-style football of possession and passing between the lines. That's fine, but there's no antidote to that. And what we saw on Saturday was just how effective it is when you play a team that's very structured and you skip past the player. Arsenal were like, shit, someone's got to go to him. And the space was there. A fantastic individual performance. And I think that as a podcast that's here to save football, hypothetically, from bad decisions, VAR and, you know, 3 p.m. blackout and all that, we also are here to look at the evolution of football. And what Morgan Rogers offered there is something that, as a kid, when I watched Lee Sharp in the early 90s and I was playing at lunchtime, I want to be Lee Sharp. I hope there's a lot of kids, you know, playing in the parks and stuff today, or on FIFA, let's be honest, and they want to be Morgan Rogers, because that, to me, could be a spark that starts a fire. And where I'm really disappointed, Will, is that when I look at the BBC Game of the Week and he's not in there, I think we've got to call that out, because if that is a spark, the mainstream are putting it out. Why is he not in Game of the Week? Like that
Team of the Week.
That was Team of the Week. That was symbolic of a different style of football that's gone missing from the game. And they go and put Smith-Rowe, De Bruyne, and who was the other one in the midfield?
Smith-Rowe, De Bruyne. Let me just get
so
that.
So BBC Team of the Week that they do every week, they don't put Morgan Rogers in. And I tell you what, it harks back to what I hate about punditry in the mainstream. You used to get this as a kid. You'd watch a game on the telly. Who's your man of the match then, Graham? Well, let's give it to the goal scorer. And I think that's what they've done on BBC Team of the Week. Well, Smith-Rowe scored a goal. De Bruyne scored a goal. And who else?
Madueke.
Madueke scored a hat-trick.
Heung-min Son.
Son scored a goal. Like, Morgan Rogers, for the good of football, should be in everybody's Team of the Week. And I'm disgusted that it's been... you're telling me that who did that team? Was it Troy?
Troy Deeney.
Well, I'll be careful because he knocked me out quite easily. He's not only is he the best footballer that ever lived, but he'd also knock out Prime Alley, apparently. So, but I just don't. I don't know why Troy or the BBC you wouldn't put Morgan Rogers in. Like, he was just scintillating, and also he was on the losing team. When you see a player on a losing team who's man of the match, Arsenal fans would just. I tell you what, I saw a brilliant bit of analysis as well on Thursday. It was on Twitter. An Arsenal fan said, "I'm really worried about Morgan Rogers exploiting Partey on Sunday." I was like, "What's he smoking?" Yeah. And it happened. That's analysis.
I mean, the guy had a good, really good game, but I mean, the way you've just talked is like the second coming of Christ is just coming. But like, they should be. You remember the Zidane movie? I'm expecting like that to be released at the end of the week, and it'll be about Morgan Rogers.
I've just jinxed the shit out of him. Let's be honest, he's done now.
Yeah, like the guy had a really good game, but like he's not.
It reminded me of Grealish at Villa, though.
Yeah, but like,
and look at what Pep did to him.
Just calm down a little bit.
You know what Grealish and Villa was like? Have you ever seen Game of Thrones? He won't have seen it. Niall have seen it. You know, there's a gay... There's not a gay in it. There probably is. There's a guy in it called... He's not called Thogden. You know the one who has his sausage chopped off? Oh,
Thogden's had his sausage chopped off.
Theon, not Thogden. A lot of people probably might like that to happen to Thogden. There's this character in Game of Thrones called Theon, right? He's charismatic. He's got a bit of an edge to him. Anyway, he ends up getting his sausage chopped off.
Right.
Changes his personality completely. He redeems himself at the end heroically, but for a long time, he's half a man.
Right, sorry. How does this relate back to Morgan Rogers?
Because that's what happened with...
Jack Grealish.
He's
had his knob cut off.
He was a brilliant player, and then he's had something chopped off.
Well, I mentioned earlier players that I want to see leave in January, and I did put down Jack Grealish here because he's 28 now, and you just feel like that career is going one way, isn't it? He'll be at City for another 2 years as a bit part player, when really going into a World Cup in America, he should be one of the standout talents in the world, really, because of everything he had.
A bit of breaking news coming in here. It's always
Morgan Rogers has just got the Ballon d'Or presented by Mark.
Do you want to guess anything else that you're going to regret when I tell you what the breaking news is?
Oh, God, someone's died.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Sven-Goran Eriksson.
Oh, has he passed away?
Yeah. I mean, it's not a surprise. It isn't a surprise because he's been ill for a very long time.
Yeah.
Look, it's always sad when you hear about stuff like that. And we've known it's been coming for a long time. Lovely, lovely guy. Lots of lovely chats coming in. Lovely guy. Yeah.
Also, what a way to sort of like take that news, and then he just sort of turned it into like a real positive, didn't he?
Yeah,
he was like, I've only got a certain amount of time left on this earth. And then he was sort of like ticking off things from his bucket list of an already amazing life, getting to do that game down at Liverpool. And also, I think the big one, I think a lot of us speak about that England team very negatively because of the golden generation. But you look at all the tributes that were coming when the news first broke, and it was all from that team, and they were all so happy to do it and all so glowing. So what's the saying of like, people can forget what you do, but won't forget how you made them feel. And that's probably a good touch.
I think I'm old enough to remember, because obviously in 2002, Japan was when I felt we bottled it actually. But I was old enough to be, I was in pubs and stuff. So I wasn't like a kid. So I was an adult essentially, and what I remember about that, what I'm trying to say is it's probably very similar to Southgate in the sense that I think the players that played for him really, really loved him.
Yeah,
and I think you've got the same with Southgate.
But how even harder then, because it was like this fractured dressing room, wasn't it?
And ultimately, wasn't the football wasn't great. It was a bit pragmatic, and you know, that Brazil game in 2002, also the Euros in 2004, he was a bit unlucky with Rooney. But I tell you what, that's where I was going to go with this. 2002, I felt we bottled it, but 2004, I think we would have won those Euros at an absolute canter if Rooney hadn't broken his foot.
Yeah. And you speak about, you know,
and that was a very underrated tournament where we were absolutely brilliant. Yeah. And then Rooney broke his foot and we lost on penalties to Portugal without him. So I think that's where I'll look back on Sven. I mean, he was a bit pragmatic. It was time to go when he went and he didn't win anything. But actually, apart from 96 and 90, I'd say 04 is the missing tournament for me where I was actually excited by England and felt part of something as Rooney came through. And that was Sven. So very sad. He'll have a legacy in the game, especially in English football. Obviously, we've known it's coming for a long time. But rest in peace, Sven.
Yeah, rest in peace, Sven-Goran Eriksson.
Anyway, from death to Chelsea,
That's it. That,
I feel like Sven.
You know, you can't.
I feel
you,
like Sven was looking down upon you for Morgan Rogers then, because I gave Morgan Rogers a load of bloody hype. We pass it to the Blues fan, and he starts skirting around the issue.
I'm not skirting. I think you need to
and
calm
then
down
Sven,
a little bit.
Sven dies, and you get a bloody get
also,
out of jail card.
Also, I know there's a spot on the One Show now, but they're very good at doing their links from good to sad. You could not be doing a One Show link from death to Chelsea. You've got to be more. Blend it in a little bit more.
I don't want the One Show.
No, well, you don't. That's not what you're saying off there. Mark, if it's all right for you, I'd like to hear from our halftime sponsors. Should we stay with Chelsea?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to talk about Chelsea because I was all ready on Saturday to say that Chelsea in crisis. Sunday.
Yeah, I think
I really thought Wolves would get something. And then they go and absolutely obliterate them and destroy not only Wolves, but a lot of their critics as well. But I'm glad I sort of got on the Maresca train a little bit last week. I mean, I didn't understand the signing when it came out, but I did say last week that he's got every right to throw Sterling into the reserves and, you know, a manager must be able to manage, and that's what they've given him the opportunity to do. I thought they were fantastic against Wolves. Cole Palmer, what a player. Madueke, you know, his little Instagram saying what a shithole Wolverhampton was, and then he absolutely shat on them.
Actually, mentally.
Yeah, I think the Wolves fans won't be wanting him back again. But I think with regards to Maresca, he's an interesting character. I mean, I took a lot of my criticism of Maresca from Leicester fans who said football's really boring, you know, even though they got promoted, which I always found weird. You get a few phoning in when I was doing the Talk Sport show saying, yeah, the football's boring. But really interesting what he said after the game, Will, where he said, I've not been told I've got to win a trophy or get top four.
Yeah.
I've got to get this squad playing better. And economically, we've got to get players out. And that's my job this year. Yeah. And I thought, woo. So it's a long-term project then.
Yeah. And also in the week before, wasn't it? He was just saying about how, you know, he's got to get it down to that 25 and he, you know, he's got to make calls. And he does, he comes across quite assertive and like he is in charge, where I think before we've labelled him as sort of like being a bit of a puppet for what's above. But like he is making those big decisions on those big players that are so established and on big wages. So I'm just quite interested in the team that went out in that second half against Wolves. Like you want to talk about, like it was an end-to-end game, wasn't it? Like we are maybe getting a bit of an antidote to this Pep Guardiola stuff, because the Wolves Chelsea game was end to end.
They move it so quick,
yeah. And Madueke and Cole Palmer just linking up so great as well. So, and in the, you know, just bringing on Neto and Felix to like sort of round off the game. I think he's probably got a clear 22 25 in his head. And if he can get it down to what he wants, then maybe moving forward, that's a quite exciting team. I know you said about maybe is Osimhen the missing piece for the top four, but.
I think I think thankfully I said it before the Wolves game anyway, so I can live off this if it happens. But Osimhen, Chelsea, top four nailed on. I mean, you look at the quality of that squad.
It's crazy. They're saying another piece though, isn't it?
But they do need that. You know, Nicholas Jackson scored the opener.
Keeper.
The rumour is he was trying to clear it.
No, I saw your tweet.
Yeah, yeah, it did well. But I think any Chelsea fan knows that Jackson can't be it. You need something better than that. And Osimhen, I think, had a is the perfect player for Chelsea. And if they get him, they'll get top four. But even if they don't get him, it's very early days. But I would still think everybody in football would look at that Chelsea squad and say, bar Man City, and even Man City now, I mean, Chelsea's squad is elite. It's an elite squad. Like there is so much talent there. The problem has been rhythm, continuity, personality, and what do they call camaraderie.
Yeah.
If they get that, they'll be a very, very hard team to stop. And they were sort of building momentum with Pochettino at the end of the season anyway.
Well,
so if they get momentum...
Pochettino has done what Maresca needs to do now, isn't it? Of like getting everyone into the positions and knowing the roles. I think we spoke the other week about the Liverpool squad. That's a really well-rounded squad in terms of everyone knows their positions and where they're at. Whereas Chelsea at the moment, but it does feel that they're on a roll to sort of be like... Right, João Felix, you're probably not going to start every game, but like this is my 11, this is my backup, these are my rotation options. But you have to give them time for that because it's an absolute circus there at the moment, isn't it? And look, where are we now? End of the week, we got the transfer deadline day. Mm. That place is going to be, I'd be like, get a camera there and a presenter and just see who's coming in and who's going out.
Well, there was talk last night, because I did it on the United Stand, that they want to get Sancho in. And I'm sort of like,
oh yeah,
do they need... I mean, like, you've got to, really, you've not only got to be a Chelsea fan... you've got to have studied Chelsea. It's like it's almost like an A-level. You can't just be a Chelsea fan to understand what's going on. You've got to have studied Chelsea for the last 2 years to pass the exam. Because I say this honestly. Why do Chelsea need Sancho? But a Chelsea fan would probably go, well, this player's gone. No, he's not being used. He's in the youth. So actually, we've only got Madueke and Kunku Mudryk. So Sancho would be very useful. But for me, you've got about 50 wingers. So I don't know what's going to happen. But what you do know is that Chelsea are going to do more business. And I think Osimhen would be... I mean, I still think they need a new goalkeeper, but you can get by with that. But if they get Osimhen, they've got a good run of fixtures, get a bit of momentum going, ignore the Conference League... Top four's the race.
But then you look at like the play for this week for it's not just saying that he needs to get rid of some squad players. This week we could see Sterling go, Lukaku's got to go, Ben Chilwell just been signed up, Trevor Chalobah, who we all sort of like bigging up as a homegrown talent. That's probably like what, another 100-150 mil there?
I'd be really interested to see who takes Sterling. I mean, I had this argument with Man United, like, you know, Man United can't sell Jadon Sancho, who's 24 with 3 years left on his contract, on 250k a week. And they're like, please go. You got Chelsea going, 29-year-old Raheem Sterling on 300k a week on a longer contract, get out. Mm. And it's like, one club, Chelsea, are like, just get out. But and the other club, United, are going, we can't get rid of you. I mean, what's the difference between Chelsea and Man United that Chelsea can just go, yeah, get out?
But with the also there was all the links. Didn't Bowley take a trip to Saudi Arabia last year? And then there was a lot of business that seemed to happen quite quickly, wasn't there? But like, I think with Sterling, he's at the latter end of his career where he could, like, I'm not saying this, I don't know him, but he could say, I'm just going to sit on this. Where it's Sancho is, you're probably trying to find a middle ground for him to just be like, I've got the peak 3 years, well, to put me into my peak, I need to find a club that like pursues me and gives me the dreams and goals that I want.
Just to flip back a bit, Z3 Music Official actually makes a really good point, and it's a super chat. So call me a super simpleton, but to play devil's advocate, the formation isn't the biggest issue for United. They scored two goals that were offside. I blame that just as much, if not more. Very good point, actually, because Rashford scored, didn't he, offside? Mm. Xerxes was offside.
Yeah.
Man United were second in the league last season for offsides. We're probably second in the league again. It is such an annoying thing at any level of football. And when I used to play at like under 14 level in a school cup game, if your striker was offside, you'd be furious.
Especially back then, because it's just long ball forward.
Yeah, it's just like, it's not difficult to stay onside. No. Look, if it's one of them marginal ones, you'd go, bloody hell, that's... But like,
it just keeps happening.
The Rashford goal, he was offside before the goal, literally the play before, and then again, like it's like born offside. It's like, it's so amateur, lazy and low IQ. And it's not just Rashford. United are offside all the time, and it's a great point. We'd have had two goals if people could stay onside.
Robert McCormack says, rest in peace, Sven. Azan has been a member for 7 months. He says, Chelsea, silence in the critics, but I hope this is more consistent. And that's what it needs to be, isn't it?
Got nearly 9,000 people watching. So remember, we're live every Monday at 12 o'clock with our Premier League review and preview on a Friday at 12. Get involved with the movement and you can listen to it on Spotify as well. Let's move towards... I wanted to just... We spoke about Chelsea there. We spoke about Arsenal. We'll do Man City and Liverpool in a minute. I just wanted to talk about Everton for a moment because a controversial moment... for Everton going back from the game against Spurs. And we've got an amazingly pratt comment from Michael Owen as well. So we've got two big topical points here. But Everton are getting the train back. Looked like Marlin Owen to me.
No, incorrect, Mark. It was actually platform 2 on London Euston. That's what I'm going with because you can see the fire exit where I think the players get off and can get what they thought would be an easy entry onto the train.
Right. Okay. Could be Euston. Let us know.
It's Euston.
He's a train stopper and train spotter. He likes Star Trek. So basically, Everton fans are waiting.
Yeah.
You know, they've come prepared. And
yeah, but also, oh no, you'd be getting the train from King's Cross if you were, but that is on the way to Euston, sorry.
So they're waiting, give them really loads of abuse. I think Morpay got the most.
Yeah, but he gave it back as well,
and
didn't he?
And he gave a bit back. Fuck and off. It was a few seconds. Fuck now, off. Niall, our producer, was furious about this.
Yeah,
he said it's disgraceful. What are your thoughts on that, first of all?
Which bit, the fans or the players?
Look, we see it. We're doing it now.
Yeah.
You know, people do it all over social media. It is a step up when you're there in their face screaming and shouting like that. Is that justified second game into the season? 4-0 loss at Spurs?
I don't think it's justified to do it then. You know, bring Niall back into it. Niall has seen me at St Andrews where, you know... I'll be having a casual conversation and something will piss me off and I'll just flip a switch, because I think in the stadium you can just... But yeah, going back to going to this, and it's the, like you said, it's the second game, it's a stinking defeat, but I mean, the best bit about Everton and some of those relegation battles is where they've just all united as a team, and like they can't be going into this season thinking like what top art. Like, I'm not saying that the results and it's the manner of the performances, isn't it? The way, like, Jordan Pickford for the second goal, hopefully that doesn't happen every week and it's not going to. So I do. I think the fans are in the wrong there for just, like, I think Maupai's come out and just said about, you know, the amount of abuse that they have to take just when they're on the way back home.
That's like, a bad tweet.
You reckon?
Well, so basically, Maupai said, look, this is what we have to put up with. And straight away, I'm not saying it's my opinion, but this is the abuse we have to put up with, right? You're on hundreds of thousands of pounds a week, right? Yeah. I used to work in the police. I've seen what firemen get, firepersons.
Morrison's calf.
Paramedics, Morrison's calf. Like, come on. Like, people get abuse in the street in all sorts of jobs. And as a footballer, you know, you're on very, very good money.
I think it's not so much the abuse. It's just like try and build like build rapport for Everton as well. But that's both ways from the fans. Like, the best things I've seen at Everton is when they've been in those dogfights over the last year. And, you know, the people have been coming to the stadium with everything. They've created an absolute cauldron there. So,
but I think Maupai, as an Everton player, the worst thing you can do is go on social media and go, you know, promote the video clip of the abuse and go, look at what we have to put up with. They're your fans. Yeah. You know, you've got to look at why they're doing that and how do I build that. You don't isolate them by calling them out. And as Kevin Carter said, Everton are doomed and the fans have got every right to vent their opinion. They have. I agree that...
Venting your opinion, I haven't got a problem with.
Venting your opinion, swearing in this situation or in a stadium or on social media, I don't care what you do on there, but going to a train station to wait for the players to shout abuse at them. I just think in some ways you understand it and everybody's different, but where I would critique it is that it dilutes the conversation, because we've had this at United and it was a long running thing from the press that the Glazers, when the Glazer out movement started, etc., they just saw United fans as hysterical.
Yeah.
And I think when you've got fans at a train station shouting and swearing at players, you sort of can go, yeah, that's not the best representation of your frustration. I think that there are better ways to do it. And I don't know what the intricacies at Everton are, but if Everton's problem is the way the club's being run or the way the manager's playing, then there are better ways to express your anger. You understand the anger and the frustration. I mean, it's a joke. Yeah. Seven goals conceded, non-scored in the first two games. And it's just, I look at Everton, and you're probably old enough to remember, I don't see Everton, if you're going to play with Deitch, you've got to be mid-table. You can't just fight relegation with Deitch and stay up. That's not what Everton Football Club's about.
Yeah, but he's had his best options taken away from him, hasn't he?
He's doing what he can do, but it's not good enough, is it?
No, but and also, it's fundamentally, like, I've had this at Birmingham, like, it's an ownership problem. Like, Everton don't really know where they're going. And yeah, it's not like, here's your five-year plan. We know we're moving into this new stadium, but the backdrop of it is we could be doing it in the Championship. And let me tell you, Everton fans, might not actually be a bad thing. You go down, you probably win the majority of your games, and you have a lovely first season in that stadium. But I think things like this almost it's probably good. The owners are that bad, they probably think that it distracts from what the truth is, and like that is them running the club so badly where they're on the second season. And things like that are almost like the fuse for the bad performances, the fuse for those moments, aren't they? Where like the fans are so angry, and then they've just travelled all the way to London, spent God knows how much money, and then just see a performance like that. And then Maupai tells them to fuck off. So you're probably like, you what?
Yeah.
You little shit. So I just, fundamentally bigger issues at Everton, and like that weekend has been the fuse for the touch paper.
He's winning the he's winning the sack race, Deitch. He's ahead of Marasca.
What do you do? Like, Deitch is who you'd bring in to replace Deitch. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
with that Everton team, like, who would you bring in?
I always said this.
Get Ancelotti back.
I think this is a question for football anyway, in general. It's not just Everton's question. When you look at Ipswich with Kieran McKenna, or you look at Bournemouth with their manager that I can't pronounce his name, and you look at Marco Silva at Fulham, that they've all got a style of play that the fans can get behind.
Yeah.
Everton have just gone for the guy that will keep us up. And I think Everton's big fan would be... If I was an Everton fan, I'd be saying, I don't just want to stay up with Deitch ball every year. Like, I'd rather stay up with what Bournemouth are doing or with what Ipswich are trying to do. And I think that's the big problem in the modern game is that Dyche is a bit of a relic. Fair or not, it will always say, look at my XG. But my point is, Dyche is associated with the style of football that's never going to be... It's a bit like Moyes at West Ham, isn't it? West Ham wanted more. And
Is that the man to replace him?
Yeah, look, if Everton want to play a better brand of football, you're going to need a better manager. But, I mean, I look at that team...
It's not the pieces there to do it with, is there?
Spurs annihilated them on Saturday. Yes. And Leicester got a point out of Spurs by playing a better brand of football than Everton. And Spurs battered Everton, without Solanke as well.
Yeah. No, I think fundamentally, like, as a fan, you get behind things if you can see them. So on the pitch, you don't know what you're getting with Dyche because obviously he's having to change and be more pragmatic. Then from a board level, you know, like when Blues got relegated, it was bad, but like there's a plan in place. And at board level, you just not got that, have you? Like, you're going into a stadium, but what are you going to get excited about?
I've got to bring this in about Spurs. Very, very good game. Really good result. They've got Newcastle away next week. I think difficult start for Spurs, not beating Leicester. It's not a terrible result, but it sort of leaves them a little bit like they don't really want to slip up again at Newcastle next week. I don't know how long Solanke's going to be out for, but it sort of messed up my FPL anyway.
In the Solanke Quanta Barco debacle?
No, what's that?
I had Solanke. Some people had Solanke Barco from Brighton who didn't play, and then Quanta.
Oh, I did have Barco. I'm not happy with FPL, actually. I did my wild card and I did it on Friday.
Oh, for God's sake. But you've got to text me when you're doing these things.
Why?
Because that's idiotic.
I know it is, but I felt like doing it. And it went wrong anyway because I looked at my team on Saturday afternoon and I still had Isak captain and I don't understand why. Because I'd used my wild card, I'd changed my team and I'd saved it and I went in. And I've got Pickford vice captain, Isak, and Anthony Robinson on my bench, and Twan Sebi starting. Oh, I was like, "This, God. I'm giving up. I'm
you
giving
just
up."
Text me.
So I could be Pratt. I could be a Pratt of the Week
contender.
Well,
you are already.
But I found a bit of Michael Owen to save me. Really, just when you think you might be the biggest Pratt of the Week, Michael Owen will come in. So imagine Michael Owen sat in his mansion with a cup of tea and a. Dipping a hobnob in it, slippers and dressing gown on, bit of a pipe, setting the scene here when he heard about Solanke signing for Spurs. So vision Michael Owen all that. And he goes, I thought, yeah, I like that. I see that. But then I heard about the fee and I thought, oh, that's chunky.
You're talking about his biscuit.
I thought that's quite heavy. I thought he might be a 30, 35 million pound player. So, I mean, I should be doing Ollie Oaks, as I say. Michael Owen there. Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, that's good.
I like the look of that. And then I thought, ooh, the fee's a bit big.
Yeah.
Bit chunky, bit heavy.
What? Where are you going with this?
30 to 35 million is what Michael Owen values Solanke at. Can I just say, 26 years of age with a contract till 2027 at Bournemouth.
Yeah, yeah.
And a release clause of 65 million. Sometimes pundits who get paid a lot of money to talk about football... should know their arse from their elbow. Yeah, but there ain't no way in a million years, probably even 2014, he wasn't worth 35 million. So I'm saying if he was playing 26, he scored loads of goals for Bournemouth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's English. Yeah, he's 26 with 3 years left on his contract. And old Michael Owen, don't ever give him a job as your director of football.
Well, I think,
leave it to me. I'm off to Bournemouth. But I've got a horse to fetch. I'll bring Solanke back as well. But 30 million, final offer. I think you know what you're going to do. I'll be in the pub watching the horse racing.
I am going to do something I've never done before.
Oh,
never do again.
We'll have a new co-host next week.
Well, if that's what I'm going to do.
Do what I think you're going to
do. No, but what I'm saying is I think he's saying in his head...
Yeah, and we know what goes on in there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Shit.
The way football's gone, that he's saying he should be worth that in a normal world.
What in 1999?
No. I'm just saying that's what he's saying. I think I'm not saying he thinks he's worth that, but I've just to dispel all those rumours. One I didn't mention a couple of weeks ago, which you've still not seen, which looks even better now. He did his top four predictions for the start of the season.
Yeah,
and did you see them,
Michael Owen?
Yeah,
no.
Oh. So this was
Do you
before,
think he's doing it on purpose?
Oh, this one must be. Like,
he's doing it on purpose.
Before I was like throwing you something out there. There's your rope, but like he's gone the
Maybe
other way.
Maybe he's actually a comedic genius.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe he's sat there going, "They've done it again. They've took me seriously again."
So Michael Owen's
just coining it in.
Michael Owen's top four in reverse order. In fourth, Man City.
Oh God. This is a joke. He's doing it on purpose. He's doing it on purpose.
Someone tweeted it and I had to go to the official graphic and it was great. Third, Villa. Second, Liverpool. First, Arsenal.
If Man City finish anywhere other than the top two,
yeah,
I will...
Buy him a horse.
I'll give $5,000 to...
Horses.
Michael Owen.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Michael Owen's horses.
Yeah. I'll feed his horses. I mean, that is bad. But yeah, oh, God, this is what we have to put up with. In America, they've got Steve Nichol and Craig Burley, and they think they have it bad.
Yeah.
We've got this. He's not the only one.
Maybe we need to make a trip to America and just say, look, we're here. Stand outside some of the offices and just go, give us a chance.
Solanke is never worth 30 to 35. I mean, Ivan Toney's not.
I agree.
Ivan Toney is worth 50 million.
What's going
with
on
a
with
year
him?
Left on his contract at 27, 28. You score goals in the Premier League for a team in the bottom half... Arsenal haven't got a striker. Chelsea need a striker. You know, Villa, Watkins and Isak are worth over 100 million easy. And they're scoring, just because they're scoring goals for Villa and Newcastle, they're a dying breed.
Yeah, they are. And also, yeah, we'll tell that to your manager
Solanke
because he's bought two of them and he's not playing 60, any of them.
Solanke at 60 million, 65 million is a little bit steep. I'd say 50 million, but no. I mean, he's not 30, 35. That's nonsense.
Because obviously the sad news broke halfway through, I think we were going to go on to your star of the week, which you did put a poll out for. But if you've done that dialogue and not picking Rodgers as your star of the week, I think...
That's why I created star of the week. We've always had Pratt of the week. Yeah. I created star of the week because I want to highlight...
Can I do a theme tune for it?
Star of the week. Do, 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 do. Anyway, the reason I want to bring star of the week in is because we are very critical with Pratt of the Week. And with Star of the Week, I want to highlight in football something that's just pure positive energy. And I thought that's what we got from Morgan Rodgers
against
Arsenal.
Does it have to be in the Premier League going forward?
No, it could be a good news story.
Mark Harris's goal for Oxford against Blackburn Rovers.
Oh, I've seen that, yeah.
Absolute thunder bastard.
Yeah, really.
You're a fan of the EFL now. Remember where you are.
I haven't seen all the goals yet. I did see Charlton beat, Peg, Thogden, Peter Kay. Your boys took one hell of a beating.
Paddy McGuinness.
What's the show he does?
Max and Paddy.
No. Does
no likey, no lying.
No, don't like that.
Take me out. We just have.
Yeah, just took you out.
We just
three
have took you out.
3 points to Charlton. Have it.
Yeah. The forums will be going mad this
week. Three from three.
Three from three. Are you just going Charlton, full Charlton?
I am in League One, yeah.
Yeah, but EFL, we sat down here Friday and for some reason you said Burnley are going to beat Sunderland. Well, have that because it's three in a row for Sunderland.
They beat Burnley.
But Sunderland won, Burnley nil. Scott Parker in the mug. Yeah, he's got expensive jackets, but has he got the win? No, he hasn't. Bristol City won, Coventry won.
Yeah, I saw that.
We need to talk.
I need to get rid of Coventry.
Yeah, I've given you options.
Although a Coventry fan did do that Liam Gallagher tweet with me looking in the snow.
Oh yeah, that was.
I retweeted, so I'm sort of now thinking. I'm still undecided. The transfer deadline is Friday.
Yeah, we've got a show on Friday. Options I was giving you were Portsmouth. That got involved with Portsmouth.
Yeah.
Watford because of Tom Cleverley. You said Middlesbrough because of Michael Carrick. League One, obviously, you've mentioned Charlton beat Bolton. My beloved Birmingham City is still unbeaten. I tell you what, you know, you speak about Pep Guardiola's thing. Obviously, everyone's trying to play at the back. There was three goals in 15 minutes at the start of the game, or 20 minutes, all of them because of mistakes from passing at the back. Like, sometimes you just got to say...
No, not in that league.
We're in League One, lads. But we beat Leighton Orient 2-1. Notts County played on the Thursday. They already won 4-1. And Cheltenham Town, it's not been great, bruv. They lost to Wimbledon.
Lost as well in the National League.
Did they? I thought they drew.
Oh, no, they drew. Got a late equaliser.
And they're playing today as well.
Are the Championship games today?
No, Championship games.
That's
today.
A shame.
Support your local.
EFL Cup watch-alongs, I wasn't planning on it. I've just seen a great chat from top player with a top comment. He said, imagine being a Napoli fan signing Lukaku and McTominay. That's a tough wank.
Yeah, but I think that should be a new section on our thing.
What's a tough wank?
That's a tough wank.
You wouldn't get that on Match of the Day.
No, yeah.
And you do it on his podcast. He'd go like, oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Lads, listen to this. Get down with the ute.
I think what's a tough wank from this? What were we saying before the air? I don't know if it was. Could we?
Oh, no, we couldn't say.
Okay,
it was about another podcast.
Oh, right, yeah.
And they'd kill us. I think. Oh, just on transfers though. Very interesting. Obviously, we cover everything here, and you know, this is a really interesting point. So, you know, I've said that this transfer window is dead. Worst transfer window in years.
Oh, yeah.
So, £850 million has been spent less in this transfer window compared to last year. We're at £1.5 billion across the transfer window so far. That's £800 million less than last year. What a fall off for the transfer window. I told you, I had a feeling, and I was right.
And it feels like it's going to get, like, you can't imagine it getting to January just because of the new rules that are in place that it's going
to
change.
Well, that's what it's all about, apparently. PSR, FFP. I'm not a fan of it, Will. I've got to be honest. I mean, I know we don't like ridiculous wages and transfer fees, but I do feel like, I mean, Liverpool haven't bought anybody. I sort of respect it in a way. There might be a reason for that, but Man City really haven't done that much. Arsenal a little bit. United have done a bit. Chelsea have done a bit, but there's not, you know, that's the season ends and then the transfer window opens, yeah. And it's like a different area, isn't it? And it has been, I say shame on the Premier League, because it's, you know, as somebody that used to get home from school and put teletext on and page 312, transfers are such a unique and exciting part of football, and they've diluted it again.
And also,
they've diluted it because all the clubs have got the money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They just can't spend it. I mean, Villa had to sell Douglas Luiz. Newcastle could spend. We're not saying let them spend £1 billion.
Let them spend, Simon.
But maybe let everybody spend another £100 million. Yeah, so then that's another billion being spent.
No, but and also, like, ethics aside, the Newcastle thing where they have got the money is like
Liverpool just signed someone, apparently. Who have they bought? Oh, Marmalade. Yeah, I can't pronounce it. Played in the Euros, good keeper from Spain, but he's a backup anyway.
But that's what I mean, like Newcastle, Villa, like we've said it so many times, Villa got into the Champions League and have to look to sell before they can buy. Mm. These should be crowning moments in teams' histories going forward. Like you think back to, you remember 2002, 2003 when Chelsea got that money and they were literally signing the best and the good. But the backdrop is we're sat here after four seasons of Manchester United Premier League dominance, and that's not going to change because they've got the keys to the castle. They're the dirty rascals, and how do you even compete? Because Newcastle should be doing that. They should be signing players that, you know, Liverpool and City are going for, because especially last year when they had Champions League football, they could offer everything. But how do, that's the worrying thing, isn't it? Not because of the teams coming up, it's like, how do you change what's at the top? Pep to go and then go, you're not allowed to bring another manager in. We tell you who's coming in.
Will's got a manager for 2 years.
Sam Allardyce is coming in for 3 years.
And that's the Chris.
The real Chris. No, I think it's just... And also, because of the way finances are happening, players are going... Well, not at Chelsea, but, you know, like Mbappe deal. Mm. Like, that should be, for this window, really exciting. Is he going? Is he not? Pre-contract agreement's all done.
Yeah. It's like Alonso's the next Real Madrid manager. We already know next summer that's going to happen. And it's like, I think football is fantastic. And I think that's why Morgan Rogers this weekend ignited something in me that's been missing, because it was purity. I've been on about this for a long time. Goal of the month 20 years ago would be goal of the season now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because like we don't get as many bangers because it's just so, you know, formulaic. But
that's why you need to get down the EFL, mate. Bangers.
But that's
bangers.
Because they're diluting football. And if there's ways that they can make it stronger, then please do, because we can't have an £800 million reduction in spending from last year. That's a huge percentage. Like that.
And also, there's going to be another league eventually. That, you know, like the way La Liga operates, and I mean that's dodgy at the best of times, but like there's going to be other leagues that mop this up.
Yeah, they will do. Yeah.
And like,
it will dilute the Premier League.
Yeah,
right?
I don't think Saudi's going to be that answer, but there's, you know, I mean, Ligue 1, like they're in trouble at the moment.
I think that's a great point. You know, if we're going to reduce people to spend that much, then we won't have the strongest league because other clubs will be able to compete. It's weird.
And also, like, you know, Serie A felt like that was on a bit of a revival as well. Like, there are, like, maybe lower down.
Then they bought McTominay and Lukaku.
Steady now, give them a chance.
You know, as well, go to Serie A. It's a bit like the Premier League, going to the toilet and the toilet's Serie A, pulling your pants out and just shitting in it. I like Serie A, but what are they doing?
No, I like McTominay. He's a great player. No,
he's crap. I just want to add a bit more. This has been sent in just now. So we know we did the Michael Owen couple. There is another one. get your head around this. It's a bit longer, but just try and understand what he's doing, because he thinks he's making... Basically, the whole line of it is it doesn't take a genius to work it out.
Right.
But let's phrase what he's talking about. It's an interesting situation for Ruud van Nistelrooy at Manchester United, because if it's 5 games, 50 games or 500 games, Ten Hag will get sacked at some point. When it does happen, the club will look for a new manager. And because that takes time, there is often an interim or a caretaker. So if Van Nistelrooy doesn't go before Ten Hag goes, you would think he might get a handful of games. Even Solskjaer was temporary and he did well. It doesn't take a genius to work out that having been a manager and now being the assistant manager, Van Nistelrooy could at some point manage Man United.
Spot on.
What's he fucking talking about?
We're spot on.
What is he talking about?
We're spot on.
At some point in the next 5,500 games, Ten Hag might get sacked. And if Van Nistelrooy is still there, it doesn't take a genius to work out that he might get given a couple of games while they find another manager.
Yeah, spot
on. I mean,
on.
This guy has got a bloody degree in stating the obvious.
I just think, again...
I found that quite funny, that one.
I think he's going to be, not Pratt of the Week, I think he's going to be my pundit of the year going forward.
I think there's a lot of similarities. Just any other things that we wanted to mop up? There was a couple of things I still wanted to say.
Go on. Just in life in general? Or?
Well, Trossard, Arsenal, has to start as he looks to the camera. I like this player a lot. As a non-Arsenal fan, every time I see him, it's not just the goals. I think technically, I really liked him at Brighton. I thought it was a very intelligent signing. And obviously, there was a bit of unhappiness that he... after the goal, in the sense that he's probably a bit frustrated. I think Arteta even acknowledged it. But I think we are at the point now where Martinelli works harder in the sense that he's a bit more tenacious, but Trossard has got to start. And it will get to a point where he will say at the end of next season, I want to move, because I don't think he's one of them players who's part of a squad that goes, I'm just happy to be here. And I think Arsenal need to play him more as an outsider. I look into that. So I think Trossard's got to start. On the other hand, I saw Trent being subbed off by Arne Slot and he was a bit moody. And I thought, I love this from players. I saw Salah do it with Klopp. I've got no problem with Trossard or Trent being moody. Yeah. And I've seen some people in the media saying, oh, petulant. I'm like, no, as a fan of Liverpool or Arsenal, I'll bloody love it if a player comes off and they're angry. Yeah, because that means they want to stay. But that is where good managers work, because he's got every right to take him off to get other people game time. It is a squad game, and that's what good managers do. They manage those expectations. And if it grows into, I want to leave, that's bad management. So I love all that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think you take it to a point, and you can be disappointed and should be disappointed. I think on the Trossard thing, it felt like when he scored his goal with one of his first touches, he was sort of almost saying that in his celebration, wasn't it? It was like very muted and very like direct. And also just that back line as well, like going forward now with Timber, Ben White settled in at right back, like that back four could really be a problem. And just, they brought it up in the analysis, but the way they were celebrating tackles as well, like that.
That's a new thing, United do it.
I just really like that. And even the little thing with Ben White, when he McGinn blasted the ball at Saliba and Ben White was like, I'm not having this, and he just blasted the ball back at McGinn. It just a little bit of thing that where you could label Arsenal as a bit weak and a bit weak-minded. I think they're showing a lot more grit.
And then just because it's a little bit of a clip that will probably do quite well. You know me, I'm always looking for that sort of stuff. Palmer's better than Foden.
Well, you said this, but we talked about... We literally did Palmer and Foden last week.
Yeah, but I'm doing it again. Okay. Palmer, for me, is the player that I would take over Foden. And I've thought about it and I'm going to explain it properly now. Phil Foden is a technical genius of a player. But I think he's a system player. I think Cole Palmer, over the last year, and he's done it again on Sunday, he is a player that you can throw him into a shit show and he will blossom. He's more individualistic than Foden. I think he's more malleable than Foden. And he is able to shine in teams that aren't necessarily built to succeed. Whereas Phil Foden's whole career, technically a wizard, but it's in a Man City team that's run by Pep Guardiola and is a juggernaut. And I think, therefore, we don't know what Foden would be like at Chelsea, but we know what Cole Palmer's like at Chelsea. And I just think he's an absolute sensation. And I don't like saying it because he plays for Chelsea. But if you're asking me, who do I want at Man United, Phil Foden or Cole Palmer? It's not even a debate. It's 100% Cole Palmer. And I know it will set off a bit of a debate, but I sort of yesterday I was watching him and was like, he's doing this in a Chelsea side that's chaotic over the last 12 months. He has only been there for 12 months. You know, I look at Antony at Man United, year three, and he's still talking about this is going to be my year. This is a young player that went to Chelsea in chaos, played under two managers, God knows what's going on above him, and week in, week out, everybody knows he's the danger man, and he's still doing stuff. And also, what I would say is, I asked a question yesterday, Will, who will get the most goals and assists this season? I think it was Salah and Watkins were the top two. I'll be stunned if he stays fit, if Cole Palmer doesn't top that. He probably won't win the Golden Boot, but and he might not win the most assists, but I think goals and assists, that type of player, I shouted Watkins out for it last year. I think he's... if his name was Rodney, he'd be called Hot Rod.
I think the unfair thing is, not unfair, but like, I'd be really interested to see if this is Pep Guardiola's season, what happens when a new manager comes in and how Foden sort of reacts to that. Because at the moment, like, obviously Grealish is the prime example of that. The shackles are on. You can't be Jack Grealish. And Phil Foden is obviously showing those absolute brilliant moments when he gets the opportunity, but there is certain limitations put on him because of the team performance.
Yeah.
So give him a full season under, I don't know, another manager, and I'd be interested in that. But the fact that we both got on for England, fantastic.
You're always going to get more respect doing what Palmer's doing at Chelsea than what Foden's doing at Man City, because it's the whole Man City yeah but whereas at Chelsea they're not a top four team, they're potential, and Palmer is, you know, shining in that. Yeah. And that's why definitively for me I would take Palmer over Foden.
Love that. A few more super chats just to end the stream. Thank you very much. For make sure you, if you're not, you've subscribed, drop a like on the video. We are live, so your donations and chats are coming in. Ashley W says less spending also impacts lower down the pyramid as well, which is a big thing for football fans. And Robert, well, I don't know why I said like I wasn't a football fan. Robert McCormack says City, Leeds, Birmingham treble this season. You know, when you can do the league bets.
Yeah, he's not really...
Again,
it's
last,
not breaking,
yeah, what did
news,
he do?
Is it?
Yeah, he's what did he do on
Birmingham, Monday? Massive favourites to get promoted. Leeds in the Championship's probably the dodgy one. City, massive favourites to win.
That's what he's just doing there.
It's
just
like me going, EastEnders tonight, 7:30, I'm thinking. Put your money, put your dinner on it.
Kaiser Wilhelm the second. They're flying in. Love the podcast, even as a Liverpool fan. Look, well, I'm the neutral one here, so you don't have to... But you've been called a Liverpool sympathiser.
I'm just a football sympathiser.
Exactly. Robert McCormack says, Jackson has more non-penalty goals in the Premier League than Palmer, Salah and Havertz since the start of last season.
I still think he's total crap.
Yeah. I wouldn't want him leading my line going forward. Look, we've got Alfie May.
Look, in many ways, he probably gets a bit of a bad press, but...
Yeah, by you.
But I don't see him as... look, the reality is there's not that many strikers around now, so he's probably not too bad. But if we're talking Isak, Solanke, Tony, Watkins, I wouldn't put Jackson in that category. And then you've got a next category of Harry Kane and Erling Haaland.
There was people speaking about him when he came in and had done different stat packages on him. Like, again, like you were speaking about Morgan Rodgers, like he was the second coming of Christ.
No, don't start on Rodgers. What I'll tell you about Jackson is if Osimhen comes in, Jackson will be sat on his arse. Because Osimhen is better.
Imagine.
I'll be worried if Osimhen comes
in. Ten Hag would buy Osimhen and start Mason Mount, and that's what would happen going forward.
Imagine that, though, if you bought Osimhen and you kept picking Jackson. That's what goes on at Man United every bloody week!
Yeah, can you imagine that? Anything else? Oh, we need to actually pick our prack of the week.
What were your prack of the week contenders?
I've got down Rio Ferdinand talking about the defender for the goal, for the Maguire stuff.
Oh, just backing Maguire, yeah.
Yeah.
Joe Cole was at it as well.
Yeah, Ferdinand and Joe Cole. Ollie Watkins, 2 stinking misses. Mm. Will he ever be considered world class? Eric Ten Hag for his starting 11 against Brighton. Everton fans and that whole... Well, yeah. Maybe not them. We've talked
Michael
about
Owen.
That. Michael Owen and Mark Goldbridge for the offside tweet about Xerxes' goal.
You know what? It pains me to do it, but sometimes you're harsher on the people that you love the most. And I think it's got to be Ten Hag because I just cannot get past how many mistakes he made. It wasn't just the team selections. It was the substitutions. I think Ten Hag this week, and we only lost by a stoppage time goal as well. It's that fine margins that even with all those mistakes, we still didn't get battered. Yeah. I think that makes it even more frustrating. So for me, it has to be Ten Hag this week, as much as I want it to be. He's got a lot to improve on this week. He made a lot of Pratt mistakes.
Yeah.
Ten Hag, your Pratt of the week.
You're a Pratt, he's a Pratt, she's a Pratt, they're whiny. Now it's time for Pratt of the week. 1, 2, 3.
Morgan Rogers, you're the star of the week. Let's hope that we get more Morgan Rogers. And that doesn't mean Morgan Rogers can go out and shag about. I mean, like, we want more players like that.
Yeah,
and if
do.
You haven't seen what he did,
we've
watch
not.
Arsenal Villa back just. And then get down the park and start doing it. Take people on. You've got to...
Never do it at the right time. Yeah, you can't be slow.
No, it reminds me of Southgate. Thanks, everybody, for watching, listening, supporting the podcast. We are back on Friday at 12.
You're wearing a different aftershave.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's an old one. I've ran out
that's
of the
nice,
other one.
Yeah. You're making yourself smell nice for me,
it's quite
aren't you?
Common, that one.
That one?
Savage.
Who? Robbie Savage?
Savage.
Robbie Savage.
It is Robbie,
Robbie
Savage's, yeah.
Is it? Charlie Savage.
Right, thanks everyone for watching. Really appreciate it. And rest in peace, Sven-Göran Eriksson, of course. We have spoken about that, but a lot of people still mentioning it. Support the podcast. You can listen to it on Spotify, of course. We're back on Friday at midday live. Loving the Premier League review show. And if you've got any comments or ideas, let us know, because Star of the Week is a new one, and I like it. Thanks, Will.
Thank you, Mark.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Rose is your name, but when you poop, it sure don't smell like roses. Your number 2 burns the hair in my nose. But we fought hand in paw. Now your poop don't stink at all. Now that the air is clear, I'll treasure your front and rear, my sweet rose.
Instantly neutralize poop stink with Poop Fighter from World's Best Cat Litter for the world's best cat.
When your team's curious and ready to grow, they do their best work, and that changes everything. At CBT Nuggets, we've spent over 25 years making IT training engaging, hands-on, and fun. Expert-led courses, virtual labs, real-world skills your team can use right now. From networking to cloud to cybersecurity, we build skills and confidence that drive results. Believe in your team. Give them the tools to thrive at cbtnuggets.com/solutions.